Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With us today is Daniel McAdams, our co-host. Daniel, good to see you.
Good morning, Dr. Paul. How are you?
Doing well.
Good.
So let's talk about economics, lockdown, foreign policy, the state of affairs. You know, we could summarize it all about this. Just emphasizes this whole principle of telling the truth.
Yeah, there's an idea.
You know, and I've been looking into that to find out how long have they been talking about it. Do you know that you can find that they were concerned about that issue from the very first book that was ever written?
Yeah.
It is very anxious. It's human nature to, you know, figure out what is truth and what is lies, which means that, you know, there's a lot of lies told. And most of the great religions don't say, you know, lying is good for us and the way you get away with it. No, most people who have dealt with this issue at all, you know, really come down on the issue that lying is not a very good thing to do. But I would say that the awareness of lying by our politicians now, for me, is more so than ever before. That doesn't mean they didn't lie before. But I just think it's more prevalent, especially with you know, the elections and all, because the very first election I was in, there was a lot of shenanigans that went on, and they continue to go on. So it's an issue that's going to be with us. So it's and this is one of the arguments that libertarians put out is, you know, that is the case. Power corrupts.
Yeah.
You put them in power, and they're going to aim for more power and more wealth, and they turn to lying to defend their position. So sorting this all out for us means that we have to challenge the status quo and the propagandists, the people who are in power. Guess what? They control the media.
Yeah.
They control the scenario and tell us what we're supposed to believe. But there was a poll that came out that I think got a little bit of encouragement,
yeah.
You know, in spite of all the propaganda. This poll was done, and they found out that the majority of voters reject this teaching of race. You know, teaching children that America is structurally racist, and this was a Harvard poll.
Yeah.
So I think this is good in spite of it all, but it is so insane. But the big thing is the parents didn't know about it, and I think parents have been awakened now, and that's a lot different than being woke.
Yeah.
And they're starting to pay attention, and this critical race theory is so bizarre, and it is so racist. This is the whole thing that I've paid attention to. Usually when somebody is doing something really, really bad in politics, their strongest tool is immediate blame your opponents for it and try to draw all the attention over. And when you're in a, if you're the one that has to do it and you have political control of the media and all, then they get away with this. They turn it around, and we've seen that in this last election. But I think this is good. It's 61% of them say, yeah, you know, we shouldn't have it. There's still too many people saying, oh, we like this.
Yeah.
But this is the very nature, I think, of government-run schools. So I'm not surprised this happened. I'm pleased that some people still pay attention enough that there's a point of where they just say, no more of this. Just like they got sort of tired of lockdown. A lot of people got sick of that, too. I'm sure there's that they all reported on that. More than 61% got sick of it all.
Yeah, and this study was conducted by Harvard Center for American Political Studies. We can actually put up this first graphic representation of the question that was asked, and I think it was 2006 registered voters. Do you believe that kids in elementary school should be taught that America is structurally racist and is dominated by white supremacy, or should they not be taught this? And yes, it is good news, Dr. Paul, that 61% think they should not be. But as you also say, the other side of the coin is, who are these 39% of the people who think it's a good idea to teach that America is structurally racist and dominated by white supremacy? I can only think that these are the people, and I'm certainly speculating, these are the ones who sit mindlessly in front of the mainstream media and soak up MSNBC and CNN, you know, the five people left in the country that watch CNN. I think they lost 75% of their viewership. And those are the people, you know, certainly not the majority, but a large percentage of the people who send their kids to public school don't really pay a lot of attention, and that might be it. And I think one of the things that I noticed the other day, our friend Jeff Deist at Mises Institute, he had a great tweet. He said, I'm not exercised by critical race theory because I already assume that public schools and most private schools teach things directly contrary to to the interests of normal people. So most people get it. This is good news, but the question is, which way is the needle going? Because the elites are not giving up on pushing this idea, as you say, the chaos theory, that the ripping Americans apart, pitting each other against each other on the basis of race, the absolute opposite of what Martin Luther King himself taught.
See, their measurement of success is just chaos.
Yeah.
And getting people fighting among themselves, and that happens, and they might say, we will look at this and say, hey, people are waking up, and they're saying, hey, why are they pushing this down our throats? Why are we forcing our kids to listen to this stuff? And the Marxist looks back and says, well, that's what we're looking for. Yeah. We want it to split up. We have to destroy this culture. Just because it's ancient history, culture has been around for thousands of years about how you're supposed to treat people and what good and bad is all about. And this is for them, it's breaking it up.
Yeah.
But I'm optimistic that they're not going to win that fight, you know, because I think there's... the way I look at it, they have such bad ideas, and they're such horrible people.
Yeah.
That are the, you know, the Marxists, and it's such a failure.
Yeah.
When you think of all the failure of the 20th century, then I just say to myself, you know, this is a struggle, but I just can't believe they're going to win. You know, they, in a way, the Marxists really won in the 19th and the 20th century. They had it philosophically, and they had this test, and finally in 1989, that whole thing fell apart. I thought, this is a victory, you know, for a little bit of common sense. But this has not been settled yet. They're back again. But I think when you look at this type of junk and their motives, they're looking for chaos, that I think we need more people speaking out. There's no doubt about it. And they're talking about it on TV even now, that sometimes people are frightened and intimidated. They don't want to say anything. And then all of a sudden somebody says, I'm going to the town hall meeting. I'm going to the school board meeting. Then all of a sudden some of that activity gets leaked into the mainstream media and say, you know, there's a lot of people there. And some of these crowds that are turning out are good size. And this is one big issue, and the excitement here is brought about because they see this as attacking their kids.
Yeah.
And I think that's what happened on this mask thing. Why all this effort on the mask when kids don't even get the disease?
Yeah.
And so there are limits, and I think that our job, I look at it personally, that we do our very best to understand the issue and encourage people to speak out, because we reject the use of force. They don't reject the use of force, and so therefore they're quite willing. And the whole thing is, they don't even care about truth. They reject the principle of truth.
Sure.
They deliberately cancel out truth.
Truth is
bourgeois. Therefore, they can do whatever they want and say anything, and there's no remorse, and they feel no guilt whatsoever.
Well, you know, there was a thing of Soviet justice. It didn't matter if you were guilty or innocent. It mattered. The only thing that mattered was the philosophy of the party. But, you know, it may seem like the CRT people are targeting white people as evil and racist, but that really isn't the target. I think the target of these people are African Americans primarily, who don't buy into it. Because if you're an African American and you say, hey, whoa, hang on, this country's not racist, like the guy we talked about who was at that school board, he said, I got two medical degrees and nobody kept me down. But those are the people who are the real targets. That's where the hatred is really focused heavily on these people, and hopefully they won't pick them off and put them in the
back. There is, and I think you're right. There might be more anger directed to them. Just think of how Clarence Thomas was treated.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that was pretty vicious. Because if they were really caring about minority races, when they sort of celebrate having a black man become and go get into the Supreme Court, no, they turn hate on him. And that I think is it. They don't want the message. The message is, a lot of black people are waking up and say, they're using us. Wake up.
Yeah.
And some that do finally wake up say, you know, I don't know, I've never understood this. Walter Williams was one. He says, I never understood this, that I needed a black leader.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he wasn't looking for a white leader or a black leader. He was looking for his freedom.
Yeah.
He wanted to be his own leader. But that's a different story, but that's really important.
Yeah, so I read somewhere recently, you know, the big thing now is there's this white supremacist taking over the U.S. Well, who are the leaders of the white supremacist movement? You know, point to us three or four people who are out there saying this stuff. You can't do it. So, right. Anyway, it's a good first start, and it's hopefully they will continue. But we want to move on now to basically an update on what we covered yesterday, which is this unbelievable vote in New York City. It is incredible. And now Eric Adams, he has filed a lawsuit against the election, which was unbelievably messed up. They put 130,000 votes that shouldn't have been in there. Somehow they didn't notice it and destroyed the entire election. And of course, we're covering it because there certainly are implications in the national election we had last year, but there are also implications for the entire electoral system, which on all sides is now, I think, under attack.
Yeah, and you would think if there were some honest people out there, they would say, boy, maybe this is worse than we thought. Maybe Trump has made a point that was right,
yeah. You know,
and maybe we should review this. But not right now. That's not likely to happen. But it seems like this is beneficial that they're actually recognizing this, and you wonder what's behind the scenes, because usually there has to be some real resentment. They haven't all of a sudden decided they want honesty in elections, you know. So there has to be factions, and it's easy to see where the factions are when you're talking about political party. But this is within the party that's been running New York for all these years, and the people who hate and can't stand, even a mention that maybe the laws weren't doing much to provide for an honest election. And I think it's going to raise more questions, and that's fine. And now the big thing is a law that says you have to have a voter ID. What a horrible, racist thing to think that you have to identify. No, they have a right to vote eight times on an election.
At least.
You just have to have a car.
Yeah.
So that's what they're doing. But I think this is good. I don't know how far his lawsuit is going to go, but it'll probably be too late.
I think the idea that it was an innocent mistake may start, diminishing, because Adams was a former police officer. He was way out ahead in the polls. Then all of a sudden this funny vote happens and he saw his lead diminish and disappear. And now they say, okay, we're going to go ahead and fix it. It is certainly concerning. Trump has weighed in on the issue. He said, based on what's happened, nobody will ever know who really won in this race. And, of course, that means something for his race. And, we don't know what happened in November. We suspect something fishy happened as well, as happens in most elections. You've been on the receiving end of that as well. But if you've got 130,000 errant votes in just New York City, and you look at Trump, who lost by 43,000 votes spread across several states, certainly you don't have to be a conspiracy theorist to wonder what's going on here.
There's no easy solution for this under today's condition. When you have a government totally out of control, even if you had the 12 most honest people in the world and you had their elected president and they go up there and they're running all the cabinets, all the departments, there's a limit to what they can do. I mean, they don't even know who controls really and pulls the strings with the Federal Reserve. And how are they going to handle that? So it's so out of control. So I think the solution has to be a willingness to say it is the perpetual out of control growth of government that is the problem. And some go a lot further than that, but I think it's the size and scope of government that people, you just can't rein them in. Honesty, sort of falls flat when there's so much power and control. I mean, how can we decide that the enemy is the military industrial complex? Are we going to round them up?
Yeah.
No, we have to round up the people and say enough is enough. Quit voting for these people and believe that freedom can provide you with more prosperity than does the government. This is all fraud. This whole thing. Yeah, but I'm getting $1,600.
Yeah.
I don't even have to work anymore. So don't tell me I have to go back to McDonald's.
Yeah.
I'm not going to do it. So so we get far, you know, further removed. But the reason why I have this tinge of optimism is this is not going to work, and it has to be replaced. The big question is, will a cultural Marxist win and reinstate some type of Marxism, or are we going to win instead of just accepting this corporatism that evolved out of the breakdown of the Soviet system? There's a big difference, because the corporatism has been camouflaged as capitalism.
Yeah.
Capitalism, and it has nothing to do with free markets and sound money.
Yes. Well, we want to talk a little bit also about the breakthrough cases, and this is something that RFK Jr. put out on his website, and I can't believe it's been almost a year since we had him on the program, but he's done great work, and he talks about this issue, and it's very curious, and we don't have a conclusion about it, we're scratching our heads, but this issue of breakthrough cases of COVID, people who have been tested positive and hospitalized and even died with COVID-19 after being fully vaccinated. So
the numbers are pretty large.
They're significant.
You know, there's a total of over 3,900 that have been hospitalized.
Yeah.
And sometimes they don't get reported like they should. And then there's nearly 1,000 deaths that have occurred. And these are people who have been vaccinated. And then they came down and they get a variant, and all of a sudden, you know, it's a big deal. That sort of breaks up the scenario. The solution to this is give more vaccination, you know, because the vaccines will prevent this, which they do not. I mean, we're talking about the complication. But the numbers were getting too big, and they didn't like that. So, and they even knew this back in May 1st, the CDC had an announcement, and they changed the way they were doing the reporting. And it says the CDC transitioned from monitoring all reported vaccine breakthrough cases to only reporting cases resulting in hospitalization and death, a move the agency was criticized for by health experts. Well, they should be criticized. Because we vaccinated so many people that shouldn't have been vaccinated. These include, I think the numbers, isn't it ironic that they said we have to, it's sort of like, sending the respirators to the nursing homes, and it caused harm. Well, we do know, medically speaking, health-wise, that the elderly that have other illnesses, they are vulnerable to all illnesses.
Yes.
So they were given most of the vaccination to the elderly.
Yeah.
And that's been the more complication there. But, there's still some things to learn from that. But nobody argues strongly, except the people selling drugs, that kids aren't, you know, they're not in danger. We have to rush it out there. And no, not just the 18-year-olds, the 8-year-old, the 4-year-old.
In vitro.
Give them the vaccines. Yeah. You know, so that's the motivation there is not truth and good medicine. And then they turn it around, and they look at individuals like us that might be pointing this out. But they don't believe in science. We believe in science. Fauci
is
a great scientist.
And
he will tell us the truth about medicine. I'd rather take my medical advice from Robert Kennedy.
Yeah. Well, it's not being anti-vaxxer. It's not being anti-science to recognize the fact that, as you say, young people, thankfully, are not getting it. And older folks are vulnerable. And people who actually are obese are very vulnerable. There was a recent study showing that the majority of people under 60 who became very sick from COVID were obese. So people that are out there eating their Twinkies at home while they're working from home are in trouble. But the thing about the CDC's changing this, we've talked about it before when it first happened, but changing the way you report it, you only report hospitalizations or death when it comes to breakthrough cases. Okay, maybe that is a reasonable thing to do, but why weren't they doing that last year when they were talking about cases, asymptomatic cases, people that had no symptoms whatsoever? They dialed up the PCR test to 1,000 and said, we've got cases. It's no wonder people are losing faith in the CDC, in official medicine, in public health, because they're so blatantly manipulating people for political reasons.
But, you know, this whole thing about changing it may backfire and do the opposite, because some people have heard that when you go to the hospital and They argue over the drugs and they put you on respirators and people die there. And there are some people that would rather be treated at home, yeah, and they stay at home, and they many times they do quite well, but it's maybe they would learn more about how, what if it came out that the people who stayed home and had the same amount of symptoms as the ones that went to the hospital, maybe they would learn, well, what did they do? Maybe they did use a nutritional approach and taking vitamins and looking to the sunshine and doing all these other things. Maybe they would finally learn that there are natural ways of handling some of these problems rather than saying, well, this vaccine, it's causing a lot of trouble. We're having these complications. The thing of it is, we need to promote the vaccinations, yeah, in this country.
Do more of
so
it.
They're not slowing up. They're just buckling down because it's a big deal for the profiteers.
And it's the one-size-fits-all mentality, you know, so that everyone equally is at risk. And that is the main fallacy of COVID-19, that everyone is equally at risk, because they're not. And it's not anti-science to recognize reality. Some people are at risk and they should take care of it. But the implication of the breakthrough cases are interesting, because either the vaccines don't work or the testing system is wrong. Something is wrong with this, and it does raise issues. But we should move on to a similar topic, Dr. Paul. And in fact, actually, before we do, I picked this out at the last minute because RFK Jr. had this up on his Twitter account. Let's look at the next clip if we can. I haven't talked to you about this, but this is the CDC. They did a poll, and it says if you've already had COVID-19 and recovered, you should still get vaccinated against COVID-19. 72.2% out of 55,000 people said no, that's false. And that is another good news story, because that says people are listening to Thomas Massey, they're listening to Rand Paul, they're listening to political leaders, and they're listening to others who are in the medical field, who are saying you get natural immunity, you know. And that's, I mean, the CDC's own poll shows that most people say no, you don't need to do that.
As much complaining as we do about our loss of our liberties, there's still an opportunity to get the message out. And even in the most authoritarian societies, there was black market in ideas. You know, people would whisper. They even had their own set of jokes and mocking their whole government. But it was always risky. You mock the government, you lost your life in some of those places. But no, I think this is great that people are recognizing it in spite of the propaganda that they have to listen to endlessly.
And we have the last main item is kind of a double whammy, but this is something that was all over Twitter this morning, and it's really interesting. The largest teachers union in the country, the National Education Association, they have a business item up for their next meeting. Let's put it up here, because this is pretty serious stuff. They don't want to go back to work. They've had a wonderful year sitting at home in their flip-flops. The NEA will call for mandatory, safe, and effective COVID vaccinations and testing for all students and staff before returning to face-to-face instruction in the fall. So they are going to double down, even as life is getting back to normal and we're not seeing the spikes they claimed that we would see in Texas and elsewhere. They're doubling down and saying, hey, you better force these kids who are not subject really to this disease, force them to get the vaccination, force them to get the shot, or we're not going back to work.
And you know, they will continue to do that and obstruct. And you would think that would be the place where truth might break out. You know, teachers that are involved with kids, and all they have to do is read a little bit and they might change their opinion. I remember early in my political career, very early, because I was not savvy, I was talking to a teacher group, and I was very much into economics and spending and deficits, and that was always a problem even back in the 1970s. And I sort of let out a subtle, not a subtle, but gently as I could, but I was annoyed that teachers are really, really missing the boat, because they haven't even learned arithmetic. I said, why should the teachers be lobbying? They were probably lobbying for more teaching money coming from the federal government. I said, don't. And then I tried to explain to them, you know, if you keep spending money, you have a lot of debt. But they would look back now and say, look how long we've gotten away with it.
Yeah,
but look how many more people are poorer because of it.
Yeah. Well, you know, Reagan was far from perfect, but I always kind of admired when the air traffic controllers went on strike and he said, okay, you're fired. You don't want to go to work. That's fine. Maybe that should happen with teachers. But in a related thing, This is, I think this is really important, and I think we have to pay attention. But finally, after what, a year and a half or so, there's been a major, major peer-reviewed study on the wearing of face masks among children. It was published in the Journal of the American Medical Association, so it wasn't, you know, published on someone's blog. This was a serious thing. It was a German study, and let's put up the next clip. This is our friend Jeff Tucker commented on this on Twitter. No shock to discover, quote, ample evidence for adverse effects of wearing such masks, and hence, quote, children should not be forced to wear face masks. What they found, Dr. Paul, is even in the best case scenario, children forced to wear face masks have 6 times the amount of carbon dioxide in their blood than is recommended by the medical profession.
And they're shocked.
Yeah.
How could that happen?
How could it happen?
You know, somebody with a little bit of common sense might have predicted that would happen. And, you know, it got worse as the months went on because, it's true. You should wash your mask. And they didn't wash their mask. They threw some away, and we've seen the garbage pits filled with masks. You'd think the environmentalists would have thought more about the environment of the kids, what they were breathing and what that mask was doing. But the environmentalists, you know, the traditional wild-eyed liberal environmentalists didn't have much concern about the mistreatment of the kids.
Yeah. Here's a couple of quotes from the study, and it's easy to find, but put this next clip up. And this is quite long, so I won't read the whole thing, but it just makes a point that they measured the carbon dioxide in inhaled air under surgical and filtering face masks is higher than what was already deemed unacceptable by the German Federal Environmental Office by a factor of 6. Children under normal conditions in schools wear masks for a mean of 270 minutes. But they're saying that actually they get it right away. The carbon dioxide builds up right away, and then it just continues. And let's do the next one. This is the last one, the last quote. There's plenty of good stuff in there. But the most of the complaints reported by children can be understood as consequences of elevated carbon dioxide levels in inhaled air. This is because of the dead space volume of the masks, which collects exhaled carbon dioxide quickly over a short time. This carbon dioxide mixes with fresh air and elevates the carbon dioxide content of inhaled air under the mask, more pronounced in the study for younger children. And this is the one thing, Dr. Paul, you talked about this long ago. This leads in turn to impairments attributable to hypercapnia. So that's what's happening with kids when you're forcing them to put this mask on. You are literally cooking their brains, forcing them to breathe carbon dioxide.
When will they see it?
Yeah,
when will they wake up? So I have another little tidbit.
Yes, yes.
Okay, this came from an article recently. The university bans the phrase triggering warning because it might be triggering. This is a study that came out of Arts College of Waltham, Massachusetts, and it's control of words. Words are the most dangerous thing you can deal with.
Yeah.
Because what it might do is somebody might be offended. And the purpose of government is to guarantee that nobody is ever offended. And you know, so many people learned a lesson early on, and they've heard this phrase, but they all forgot about it because it wasn't sophisticated enough. But when kids get together and they get into a little squabble and people start calling each other's name, somebody might say, you know, sticks and stones will break my bones, but names will never hurt me, and then he walks away. So, but this is it. But this polling in this college now says it does hurt. And you have to make sure that people are not offended. They have a right not to be offended. But some of the things that they do is really, really terrible. These are the things that are banned. Triggering warning, which goes, you have to get rid of that because it suggests guns. You know, a triggering warning. Along with, take a shot at it. Now, that's bad. That's guns. You're pro-gun. You're pro-violence. They claim you're violence there. Oh, here's a very dangerous thing to ever say. I'm going to take a stab at that.
Uh-oh.
Oh, that's the knife, and, you know, that's dangerous, too. Probably more dangerous than the guns. Who knows? And killing it, you know, successfully doing something, you know.
You killed it.
Yeah. And it's a casual term used. But once again, look for chaos. Put on the guilt and say you're a racist for talking like you were learning how to talk all your life.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, don't say that because it's so evil. They consider this so racist. And when you think about it, you can think of Martin Luther King.
Yeah.
You know, he said that you should never judge people either in a racist sense or what they say and do. You should judge them by their character. And I think we've totally lost our way on that. The children get a little bit confused on this, I'm sure, but as if language is the problem. That isn't the problem at all. It's the authoritarians that think that they can improve society, and it looks like the people that do this, back to our old theme, they do this. What can we do to just people say, what are they doing?
Yeah.
Are they nuts?
Yeah.
And then somebody will become more aggressive and say, oh, this is racist, you know, back and forth. So that's a big thing going on. But of course, even today, we pointed out a few times when attitudes can be shifted. And I think we have enough freedom left in this country to be able to change opinion, you know. The very bad authoritarian government, there was always a secret way with communicating. Well, you know, even in the founding of our country, they didn't have TV or radio, or they didn't have control of newspapers, but they had a control of a printing press, and they could do pamphlets, and they distributed them, and they changed people's opinion.
They did. Well, you know, what this is the politicization of language itself, and Orwell understood this very well. He said, political language is designed to make lies sound truthful and murder respectable, and to give an appearance of solidity to pure wind. And I think that probably captures pretty much everything. So I will just close by thanking our viewers. Please subscribe. We'll have more information about our upcoming conference, and we're going to send it out first to our subscribers. Go to ronpaulinstitute.org. Subscribe to updates for free, of course. We're never going to give out or share your names or information with anyone. It's only so we can keep in touch, and we'll be sending an update out very soon.
You know, we talk about, name calling and mask, and it's always, Hillary taught us, it's always for the children. We have to care about the children. But, it is designed for that, but that's usually just an excuse, and usually what they do is exactly opposite. You know, this thing, whether it's critical race theory, I saw one report showing what has been done in the last 100 years and how benign, this problem is that they were talking about. One person got on, he was a Caucasian, he was white, you know, so yeah, he was, but in the conversation, he was very, very decent, nice person, but he was on the side that you just don't go around doing it. It turned out that he had adopted a black child, and he says, nobody in my family can conceive of what you guys are talking about.
Yeah.
And what his point was, that there's been that transition. And of course, we already mentioned that the people on the other side of this argument do exactly the opposite. They turn against, minority that might turn around and want to assimilate and not have this racial conflict. So, and sometimes you just wonder how they can continue to do this without asking specific questions. Because I think for a while it's going to get much worse, because the country is going to get a lot poorer, and that's what the blame is going to be. It's already the case. And we have a tremendous job of sorting this out, too, because they'll say, you libertarians, capitalists, this is what it's done to. This is what it's done to our country. And look at all the poor people out on the streets. That's what we have to stop. We have to treat everybody equally. Everybody has to have equal. Yeah, like San Francisco, they've been working on that for a long time. So the goals are different, but the definitions, back to Orwell, the definition, We don't have freedom. We don't have free enterprise. We don't have capitalism. We don't have sound money. We have a corporate system. We have corporatism. It's closer to Mussolini in some regards. And that's the real enemy for what we have there. They're authoritarians. But I tell you what, they know how to milk this, and the friction is growing. I think for a while it's going to get much worse because the country is going to get poorer, and some of those who are in control are going to have greater wealth. But you know what? With runaway inflation and destruction of currencies, there's a lot of evening out of those people who have accumulated all the power and the wealth. Something can happen. But I think our job is to try to present the case and get people to understand what's going on, and also about the alternative that can be found in the cause of liberty. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today to the Liberty Report. Please come back soon.